Hey guys, welcome to episode 235 of the podcast with my delightful guest, Julia Rotzi. I hope I pronounced that right. I just realized that I probably haven't said her last name aloud to her ever. So Julia, if you end up hearing this, I really hope I said that correctly and properly. I just think the world of this girl. If you're not familiar with her work, I think you probably will want to be once you listen to this episode. And shout out wise, I am behind, and I know that from memory, I want to thank Superbad Larry for his awesome email, and I'll have to get caught up on others in the future. But hope everybody's doing great, and I will talk to you next time on the podcast.
Now entering Nerdist.com.
Okay, God, that was like so many. I was like, full disclosure. And I think I even forgot one, which was I was going to say, yes, I am wearing my pajamas. I feel that it's like, it's. I think they're like, this is sort of a, could be almost like a an outfit.
It's a lounge outfit.
But it's, I mean, it is a lounge. It's very much a lounge
outfit.
It's great. But I immediately had to think after you told me about that documentary, like, how old is this? Am I getting enough use out of it? What am I doing? Who's making them? What
oh,
tiny
yeah.
children
I'm like
are making
shaming
them?
Shaming everybody, including myself. Yeah. Yeah. It's good.
It's delicious. Yeah. It's absolutely delicious. Yeah. It's tough, man. Those are the things that.
Are we recording?
It's yeah. Sorry.
Oh, cool.
There's absolutely no intro whatsoever. Sorry. It becomes very mid conversation. It is sort of going down that road of like what in terms of pick your battles, you know,
yes.
how do you remain a productive member of society and make better choices and make more conscientious choices without also like spiraling into a hole of sadness and stress about the state
yeah.
of things?
Well, I think it's okay. So trying to save the world is like a natural feeling if you're empathetic and sensitive and care. However, saving the world is like a huge task for one person. So I think the biggest thing you can do is change your own life. So like, I have a huge problem with hypocrites. I think a lot of us can be, myself included. And I think there's a lot of people that like post a lot online and, you know, tell other people how they're supposed to be a feminist or a, you know, whatever they're yelling about. Right. But then if you were to like rifle through their home,
yeah,
you know, you could, and again, nobody can be perfect, but like every single thing you do has a consequence. So like where you buy your clothes, what kind of food you purchase, I mean, really where you spend your money is where it all comes down to, because money is the root of yeah. most problems.
Yeah.
So I really believe in like, you know, if you're a nice person, like think about when like someone's really nice to you at a store. You then leave and you're a little bit nicer to the next person, and then they're nicer to the next person. And so yeah. I really believe in those little changes. And so yeah. I don't know, like I never want to like preach to other people, but like I just try to live the light as, you know, as conscious of a life as I can, mm-hmm. and also just be open to when someone wants to give me a note.
Mm-hmm,
like
mm-hmm.
my boyfriend is Black, and I, before dating him, thought that I was really, you know, I was a sociology major, and like I thought that I like really had, you know, a quality down
sure,
pat.
Sure.
And I was like, look at me, I care, you know. And he has pointed out,
because you don't want to feel like part of the problem. If
no.
if you're an empathetic person,
yeah.
I feel very much the same way. And I do have that sort of like, oh God, what's all the unconscious stuff I'm
yeah.
doing? It's like, it's not ill intended, but
right.
am I contributing to something and that kind of stuff?
Well, and also being too PC and too whatever, like there's a balance with everything, because, you also don't want to be the kind of person, I don't want to be speaking on behalf of Black people or gay people when I'm not either of those things. Right. But
you want to be an ally.
I want to be an ally. Yeah. Yeah. And so he.
How long have you guys been together?
About almost 3 years.
Yeah. I'm excited. And I know you guys have a podcast too, which I'm so excited to do.
Yes.
So tell us about that in a second. But yeah, I go back to everything you were just about to say.
Yeah.
About.
No, I was going to say like
it's, you thought that you walked into it thinking like, I got this, everybody.
Yeah. And yeah. It's been really great when he does point out, and not in a bat, he's not angry.
Right. Right.
But when he's pointed out like, hey, you know, like you speak about blah, 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 but you're kind of acting like a privileged white girl right now. And I'm like, I'm Italian. But he's like, I'm like, how dare you? But it's been really, in an ideal world, everyone would have a really close-knit group of people that they trusted to be honest with them that were all from different backgrounds, because I can ask him questions that I would never publicly ask or things I would, you know, and vice versa with him. I'm his first like serious girlfriend. And so there's been things about being a woman that he's asked that like he, you know what I mean? Like it's, you can only learn by asking like dumb questions. That's why I think with people like coming out as like racist and ignorant, it's like, yeah, but it's good. Because maybe someone in their lives that will care, they'll connect to, and they can be like, hey, you know, when you say X, Y, and Z,
yeah,
it's really fucked up.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's a really good point. It's sort of how much would we rather have something that's institutionalized and that is sort of like not even like you become blind to it unintentionally or maybe intentionally in some cases rather than, and I feel the same way. And I've definitely done that on the podcast. Like I've fully embarrass myself on the podcast with friends of mine who come from other backgrounds. Not even in a way where I think I'm asking something racist, but that I am so that I'm like, and also please tell me if this is racist.
Yeah.
Or like, please tell or call me out. Or like, I want to hear about your experience growing up in this place. And, you know, and would I have thought to ask X next question? Like, oh, you're volunteering something to me that I would never even thought to ask because that's not my background.
But also you can vibe. That's why the internet has been such a blessing and a curse, because the problem with the internet is you can't feel energy. So like when you're having a face-to-face conversation with someone, you can feel their energy. You can tell if their intention is to be a monster or if their intention is like, hey, I have no idea.
Yeah.
You know, like you can, they put their hand on your shoulder. They look you in the eye. There's like all this stuff where you can tell if it's safe or if it's evil. And the problem with the internet is you could say something completely from like a compassionate, sincere, clueless place. And then someone's like, I'm going to write a think piece about you. And you're like, do you remember, it was a while back, like Justin Timberlake, I can't remember what the situation was, but he said something and like, I think it was like a bunch of white people got mad at him because they said it was racist. And then he was like, what? Like, actually, let's scratch that whole story because I might be making something up. But it's just
in a hypothetical situation.
Yeah, in a hypothetical,
someone says something and you don't. Yeah, you can't contextualize it at all.
Yeah,
like kind of in any way. And so, yeah, that's tricky. And by the way, I do not envy people who are in the public eye in that way, where that sort of everything they say and do can be twisted. And I'm fascinated by the, well, first of all, that made me think of two things, and then I want to get back to you and your boyfriend and your wonderful podcast. But number one, it's very interesting that you would bring up all this up, particularly about the money thing, because I'm on this, there's like a neighborhood kind of forum board that's like, you know, 80% great in terms of, hey, you know, I'm looking for a great carpenter because I want to, you know, build like a bench and I want to hire someone local and like, do you have people you like, or you know, where can I recycle, like those sorts
of
things.
Is this an online board or?
It's an online board. Okay. And it's just like my neighborhood association, you know, sent me a link and was like, hey, we're doing like, we're talking about, you know, our conversations with our city council people and that sort of thing here. And so this sort of like using, you know, actually using something like the internet, which can be distancing, to sort of create more of a sense of community where I have a much stronger sense of like who's not just in my neighborhood, but in adjoining neighborhoods and like what's going on with the park and things that really matter to me in that way. But there also are these sort of like things that I just would never participate in where I accidentally, like I click on a link thinking like, oh, this is going to be information I need to know. And then it does dissolve into this like weird catty political, like people just like, you know, trolling each other and stuff. 20%. Yeah. Still, 20% is a lot, but to me. But, you know, so there was this whole conversation about a store and where a store that had donated money to Prop 8, which was anti-gay marriage. And the vast majority of the people in this forum were like, oh my God, it's so great to know that. Or yes, I did know that and I'll never shop there or whatever. And then there's this one voice that comes in and he essentially did. I mean, I've now come to understand through this thread that I started reading that I got sucked into that he is like a shit disturber and that he consistently tries to sort of be the devil's advocate, mm-hmm. but in like a semi-aggressive way. But he did sort of go off on like, well, you know, he essentially said you're fascist if you choose not to spend your money with a store because you don't agree with their ideals. That's like you're trying to stop the free market or something like that. And everyone was like, that's not what we're saying at all. But he did say like his next go-to, which is very true, was how do you like, where are you going elsewhere? And do you know where they put their money? Because there's a lot of stuff that you're buying every day that you're putting your money towards, that you're paying utility to, that is doing a lot of questionable stuff. And just because you know that this smaller mom and pop shop ish, put money towards something you don't agree with, like, are you confident that you can say that about all these other places that you're going instead?
Right.
Which is a very fair question. And unfortunately, I think that part got lost in the stuff that he was saying that was not as sound-minded, yes. and was like more, you know, it was a fashion to make people kind of get angry. But it did sort of stick with me, and it is that sort of idea of like, well, where you put your money has so much to do in our world, in our culture, American culture, with what you're supporting unknowingly or knowingly. So that was very much on my mind.
Yeah.
And then the other thing was, I mean, just the idea of like being a person who is going to, like, you're in a position where everything's going to be looked at with a magnifying glass, and this whole thing that we're going through. And I don't want to spend a ton of time talking about our president, but just the idea of like these big questions that are being asked about truth and the news, mm-hmm. and bias in the media and fake news and all that kind of stuff. Just to imagine being a person who would be comfortable being like, yeah, I'm going to put myself right in the crosshairs of all of that conversation. Like everything I say is going to be analyzed. Makes me sick to my stomach. Like, I just can't imagine being that person who's like, I'm going to do it. I'm going for it. I'm going to talk big. I'm going to say this, or, you know, being like anything like that. It just feels so anxiety inducing to me because I'm like, I'm always learning and I'm always apologizing and I'm always trying to get better and I'm wrong a lot, but I am willing to be wrong because I'd rather be that. But like,
but that's, you know, your contribution.
Just have that under a microscope would be so stressful.
But I think that means your contribution is to remind people that it's okay to not know. Like, I think that's another thing, is that there's this, it's almost like you're not allowed to say, honestly, most of my answers to things are maybe, I don't know, sorta. Like, there used to be a time where people could be moderate. Like, I was never registered on any political party until this past year because I felt like I had to. I was always an independent. Yeah. I always kind of just like went with my gut. Like, mm-hmm. And now all of a sudden it's like, you have to, like, there's like, it's like a sporting event where like you have to pick a team. And like, you know, I watched my dad, who was always a moderate, really fall far, not far. He's not, you know, right wing by any means, but he definitely has embraced more of his conservative side because he's an Italian immigrant. You know, he's not PC. He's 75 years old. And, you know, he'll make a joke and be like, oh, what do you think? I'm gay. You know, like, he'll just make a dumb dad joke.
Yeah.
And like, when I was home a few months ago, I caught myself because I was like, daddy, how could you say that? Like, I like got like, so, and he was like, Jesus Christ, I can't say anything. And I was like, oh my God, this isn't my battle that I need to pick. Like, none of my, I was like, and again, I'm sure there's somebody that would be insulted by that. But like, most of my gay friends were like, dude, your dad's not, like, my dad's not a bad guy. He's just, but he has felt this, like, I feel like a lot of this has pushed him out of being moderate. For the time being, I think he's too smart to not kind of float back.
No, this all is very, like, it all sounds very familiar.
Yeah.
I think that's happened with a lot of people, particularly people of a certain age group, right?
And yes.
That there is this sort of like,
well, no one's listening.
Can I not say anything now?
Yeah.
Like, those sorts of things. I totally understand that.
Like, without being attacked. And it's like, you know, I have to remember a lot that, like, you know, my parents are the ones they didn't go to college. They paid for me to go to college. They really supported me throughout my life. They wanted me to be a more evolved, enlightened, experienced person and do the things they couldn't do. They would never have encouraged me to become me if either of them were shitty. You know what I mean? So the last time I went home, I decided to have another conversation with my dad about politics. And instead of like, I didn't talk very much. I just listened and I just watched him go from like yelling buzz terms to going back to moderate and being like, you know, it's just been really tough because I feel like I've worked really hard. And like, and he was, and I was like just doing a lot of like hand on my heart, hand on his shoulder, being like, gosh, that must be like really frustrating. And like, it makes me almost want to cry because I realized that, you know, we all let our, it's very easy to jump to rage. And I'm not saying, I 100% agree that like some people need to be the yellers. Like you were just saying, you wouldn't want to be that. I'm glad that there's some people that want to be the very outspoken because everyone has a role. I'm glad that there's people that want to camp out at Standing Rock and own a tent and are like, I can't wait to go to Wall Street. Like, that's not me, right? But what I really like to do is I really like to have conversations with people that are different than me because I think that I'm pretty good about being like, huh, never thought of it that way. So like everyone serves a purpose. And then to go back to the money thing, like that guy is right. Like, but I think to try and make sure your entire life is being lived by the book would drive you mad. So I think if you can pick a couple of things, like two of the things I feel like I can control is I can really control where I spend money on food and where I spend money on clothes. Watch the movie The True Cost on Netflix. It'll change your life about clothes. And those right now feel manageable to me. Mm-hmm. Because
if that becomes enough of a habit that feels like second nature, then take something else on. Because then exactly. It's like, okay, let me adapt this new thing because life went on and I'm okay. And I don't feel anxious about it anymore. Or like, this is a thing that I just got into the habit of and it's a positive habit. And so now I'm going to take two new habits on that are productive in that direction or whatever.
Like the food thing, it was because I watched, I think it was like Food Anchor and I started, that was like, I don't know, 4 years ago. So for the past 4 years, I've not major changes, but I just ask more questions about where my food comes from. So now that's second nature. Now I just watch this documentary about clothing.
Yeah.
So I'm like obsessed with learning about where my clothing comes from and only supporting ethical companies. Mm-hmm. And in a year or two or whatever, when that becomes second nature, then I'll add another thing.
That's great.
It's like you just, your whole life is evolving into the best person you can be. So when I meet these people, I don't know, that are just so righteous about it, it's like, yeah, but your fucking cutesy feminist t-shirt you're wearing, what did a woman with no health benefits chained to a sewing machine in a third world country make it? Then you're an asshole. You know, like, don't tell me how to be if you're not being whatever.
Yeah.
That was the most don't tell me whatever when you're whatever. That's when my boyfriend would be like, you're a white girl.
Okay. Questions. So you're first generation American on both sides?
Both your parents? Both my parents came here on boats separately.
Both from Italy? Okay. Mm-hmm. And do you have siblings?
I have an older sister.
This is
four
like a weird
older.
Rapid fire section. I've
No, no, no. Invented. She's 4 years older. She's a therapist, married with two kids in Boston.
Great. Your parents totally cool with your boyfriend being black?
It was. At first, when I was younger, it was an absolute no. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, you stay, even though my dad always hits on black women, it's such a weird,
that's funny,
unlived life thing. But they're still together, but he still hits on women all the time. And
so funny,
you know, and they were, you know, hesitant at first. And then I kind of just watched them be like, it's been really cool to watch them evolve. They're totally fine with it now.
Yeah.
He's great. So, you know,
I would rather, I mean, listen, I'm standing on the outside, like picking and choosing what response I want your parents to have. But in a way, it is cooler to see something evolve than to be like, yeah. My parents felt exactly as they did. They accepted him immediately. And then someone else's parents never accepted it. It's like, well, it's kind of beautiful to be the parents that evolve rather than like, yeah, nothing changed about how they felt. It's had no impact on anything. It's like, well, that's great because that's exactly what you're talking about. That sort of,
yeah,
the potential for personal interaction to help evolve people at all stages of their life into like, oh, this is personal now. And this is something that I can see right in front of me. That's like, this is great. They're happy and all that kind of stuff.
Oh, yeah. I mean, yeah. A lot of, you know, my parents or most people when they have a fear, I mean, it's really fear. It's not coming from like a place. There's a, again, it goes back to that thing. There's a huge difference between someone who's fearful and someone who's hateful. And I don't believe that many people are hateful. I really don't. I don't. Some are, and that's really unfortunate. And I also think hate can sometimes be a mental illness. I mean, I don't know. So I'm sure someone's going to write a think piece about that. But because everyone's writing think pieces about me all the time. I don't know. Just so many.
Yours is going to be titled, Don't Be Whatever.
Yeah.
Whatever.
And it's just like, you know what I mean? Like, but but yeah, they just, it was actually my boyfriend that I think was it made me fall in love with my boyfriend more, because basically what happened was we met. I immediately was like, oh my God, I never even considered this because of this like old sort of notion from my parents. But as I've gotten older, like I've been divorced. I, you know, don't live near my family, like all the things that they were always afraid for me to do, I did it and then everything was fine.
Yeah.
So I sort of just trusted that would happen again. And so when we first started dating, I was very upfront with him. And I remember some friends were like, why are you telling him this? It's going to make him feel bad. I'm like, because I want to protect him. And so I was like, look, my parents are like old school Italian immigrants. You know, he's like, oh, let me guess, they're not into you dating outside your race. I'm like, yes. And like, I was like, you know, and he was like, look, I don't believe they're bad people. There's no way they could have made you if they were, you know. And he's like, and then he made me feel better because he was like, my grandparents were hesitant about interracial dating.
Sure, absolutely.
Because my parents are a little older and like they're a little closer to his grandparents' age. And I was like, oh, really? He's like, yeah, black people sometimes don't want there are kids to date white people
all the time.
And I was like, oh,
in all kinds of groups for.
Yeah.
And to your point, like how can you look at experientially? I think that's a word. Why those things exist. It's very rarely from a Nazi perspective, which by the way is also fear based.
It's just habit.
But it's like, but and there is also a sense of like, you know, that, I mean, that's how I felt. Like I was so deeply offended when I dated Jewish boys in high school and their moms were like, I don't want you to marry. I mean, like, you're going to still marry a Jewish woman, right? Like, you're not like, get this out of your system now. But some of them were openly not super happy about me. And I was so horrified. I mean, I was so angry about it and self-righteous about it. I was like, excuse me, not to them, but to my, you know, whoever that boyfriend was. And it's like, take one step back and take a hard look at why those things exist.
Yeah.
It's usually not like, we're not talking about like, well, these people lived in a beautiful crystal castle and I'm the servant and they're worried that da da da. It's like, no, their whole history that they watched their family go through and like all these kinds of things that contribute to the idea of like, we need to protect this religion and culture and way of life and, you know, solidarity, like all of those things feel very important to on a very basic sense, like a survival of something that you care about or that you've grown up with. So it's totally understandable. Well, it's like, I'm not the enemy. You're not the enemy either.
Yeah. I mean, for my parents, a lot of it was they're very protective. You know, there have been times in comedy, like, you know, my mom's like, do you have to, this is a contest. Ma, what if you lose? I don't want you to be sad. Oh, you know, like there's like this protectiveness. So their minds are like, but like, you know, they're old school. So in their minds, they're like, you date outside your race. Your life's going to be harder than if you have a kid. Yes. Like they just want to protect you from the pain.
Yes,
right.
Yes.
And when they, you know, when you kind of break whatever and then you like do it, you know, it's just like, you just gotta like throw them in the situation and then they're like, oh, this isn't that bad.
Right.
So it was really cool to watch that.
Yeah.
And I'm really proud of them.
Yeah.
I mean, I know that might sound silly to other people.
No, it doesn't sound silly at all. I think that's wonderful.
It just, it proved to me that like, it's never too late to learn something new.
I could not love that more.
Yeah.
What were the guys that you were dating in high school like? Like how much interaction did you have with your parents and them?
I didn't really, well, it's okay. So it actually, in high school, I didn't have any boyfriends.
Where'd you grow up?
Belmont, Massachusetts. Okay. So like right outside of Boston. Okay. But there was one guy that was black that I wanted to go to prom with. And that was when I first learned that my parents weren't into the idea. But then he ended up not even asking me and breaking my heart. But
Great.
So it worked
out.
Well,
we've got him right here. Yeah, could you come in here, please?
So my parents were thrilled. But so I didn't know there wasn't really a lot of interaction in high school and then college. I mean, I was pretty much, I didn't, you know, like most kids, I didn't really understand, I didn't know how it all worked. It just would be like, I would like hook up with someone and be like, are you my boyfriend? Uh-huh. And then my first serious relationship was with my now ex-husband, who I'm still friends with. Mm-hmm. And he was very white. Mm-hmm. Where like I felt, you know, like,
you're like, it's so exotic.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I was like the crazy loud Italian. Uh-huh. And yeah, that was really it. I mean, he was the first one they met, and then we like stayed together forever. Mm-hmm. So that was it. There wasn't a ton of interaction with my parents and guys, but okay. Did they
have strong feelings about like whether you could or shouldn't date when you were still living at home as a teenager?
I don't know. Never really. I mean, it was there was definitely like, do not have sex. That was like a huge thing.
And was your relationship with them such that you were like, oh, I better follow that and I believe it? Or was it like, I don't know if these guys know what's right or wrong?
I mean, my attitude about sex when I was a teenager was like, I was terrified to get pregnant. So that was like the big thing. And I wanted to be, after having done like, you know, giving someone a blowjob and then them not talking to me, I was definitely like, okay, well, if I'm going to like potentially put myself at risk for getting pregnant, because I just assumed you could immediately get pregnant. Mm-hmm. I wanted to make sure they at least liked me. Uh-huh. So that was really my standard.
Uh-huh. No, but I mean, I think that's a really interesting, I mean, that is sort of a, I don't want to say it's like a trope because that makes it sound tired, but, and not real, but that is something that there are various ways you learn about sex and versus relationships.
Yes.
Versus, and so for some people it is like they had absolutely zero contact with whoever, whatever sex they were interested
yeah.
in. They had zero sexual contact with him in junior high too, sure. And then there are people who, you know, sort of dove in and then found out like, oh, there's something, like I'm having emotional feelings about,
yeah,
like that, you know, I that sort of like, like maybe this doesn't, maybe this is the way we go about having a relationship and then being rejected in that way,
yeah,
by doing something sexual. Then there's like, oh, like I had teenage friends and college friends who were like, oh, I have a very open sexuality and I don't attach anything emotional to it, but then they would anyway. Like that, I would have girlfriends,
yes,
who would go into hooking up with someone going like, I don't give a shit. And then the like routine would be like, I haven't heard from him in 2 days. It's like, well, sweetie, you said,
yeah,
you didn't care and you didn't know him and you guys hooked up and now you do care. And on both sides, that would happen to me with guys and girlfriends.
Yeah.
And so like, there's all these different ways, right, that you can sort of find yourself getting acquainted with like the way, what your relationship is going to be to sex and sexuality. And so,
yeah, I was like a very horny, like I would hump the shit out of my beanbag chair, like, uh-huh, as a kid.
Yep.
You know, I was definitely kind of always like excited. Like I was excited to do sexual stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I did. It was just the actual intercourse part to me was like pregnancy. So that was something I held out. So it was right before my 20th birthday that, mm-hmm, I slept with my then boyfriend. But my parents, I mean, I guess I grew up in, you know, my dad was my mom's first everything, and then they got married. And so my mom at least didn't understand dating. So I remember as a teenager and a young adult looking at friends who had like a year-long boyfriend, then another two-year-long boyfriend. And I'm like, so let me understand. So you guys just don't talk anymore? Like, I just didn't understand.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that was part of why, and my ex is lovely and wonderful, but it probably should have ended way sooner, just because I think we needed space to grow up. And
sure.
I know I definitely did.
Yeah.
But we just kind of stayed together because I was like, well, he's really nice and I have no reason to not be with him. And this is kind of what you do. You like meet someone and then you're with them and that's it.
Yeah.
So when I got divorced, it was really interesting because my parents were like, oh, that's an option. Like, you can do that and the world doesn't fall apart.
Right,
like, I think,
right.
You know, without sharing too much of their personal lives, I think they were both like, oh.
Interesting.
Yeah. They're old and they're just exist, yeah. You know.
And it's also like, and they're so, again, in terms of like, there's no right way for everyone. It's so, it is like marriage, like anything else, I think is, you know, like it's so hard to tell from the outside and often from the inside, like when to let it go or this side, because I feel like, you know, I have family friends and my grandparents, I don't know, like my grandparents were both my sets of grandparents were together till the day they died, you know, like that generation, very common. Mm-hmm. But I also felt like they really loved each other. Like mm-hmm. I didn't ever get, and maybe that's just not what I was exposed to. You know, I would never hear that they had problems. I'm sure they had plenty of problems, but they like really still loved each other and loved their lives together and were, you know, devastated when in each case my grandfather died before my grandmother, not a surprise there either, but really sort of devastated, you know, there wasn't, and so you don't know like what marriages do last through the things that are really difficult that would break another couple up, and then they're stronger on the other side and they yeah. are glad they stayed together, and which parent, there's just no, it's so individual, you know yeah. what I mean, so like they're, it could be that they should have given up long before and like, but maybe they would have been one of those couples that like suffered through something that felt unbearable. And then came out on the other side,
yeah.
like looking at each other, like, thank God we did this and we stayed together. I don't know. It's just so hard to know.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. So
what were you super into when you were in high school? Were you, like a music kid? Did you love, did you even like school? Like what?
I always wrote a lot. Like I wrote like a lot of poetry and huge journal keeper, like forever.
Yeah, I don't anymore. Do you?
Every now and then I'll write something, but I'm also so much of my writing now. And I have to remind myself to sometimes not write on a laptop because handwriting is such a different thing.
Yeah.
But so much I feel like of what would go in a journal is now going into like podcasts
stand up.
Book proposals and whatever. But
I think that's an amazing evolution. Like that's awesome.
Yeah. But so I always wrote, and I really liked to draw, and I loved comedy, like specifically sitcom, like Three's Company, you know, that whole kind of from then on, you know, I watched Benny Hill when I was like two, you know, I loved like kind of naughty, like I loved Porky's and all that. Mm-hmm. I was like a pervy kid, you know, like, you
I
know,
was too for sure.
Yeah.
Anything I could get my hands on.
Oh
was
yeah.
Like, these guys know those people who have listened to the podcast, more than a handful of times, probably at this point, or even like other places where I've talked about it. I had like a very intense sexual crush on John Larroquette from Night Court. Like real intense, like real early. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I was not like Corey Haim. You know what I mean? I was like, I want that full grown, lustful man who loves staring at woman's boobs.
Yes.
Like what's going on there?
Mine was, mine I guess was weird for a kid, but not for adults. Mine was John James he was on Dynasty and then the Colbys.
Okay. I've never seen any
like,
of those.
I used to watch soap operas with my mom, again at like age four. Like I shouldn't have been watching them.
Uh-huh.
But like in National Lamp or European Vacation, there's like so much boobs. Uh-huh. And I just was like, yeah. Uh-huh. Like I
me too, for
loved
sure.
it.
For sure, me too.
So I definitely, my sister and I like, you know, like made a lot of, I always was, it sounds so cliche, but like I was always the one like being like, I'm going to put on a show. And like, but it was always comedic. Like my family's very funny. Like it has been our survival method 100%. Like we've gotten into vicious, violent arguments and then someone's cracked a joke and then everything's been okay.
Yeah.
And I'm so grateful for that because it's helped me like bring light to dark so much, because I have like, I think, you know, not to go back to the president, but like part of why I can't stand him, policies aside, is like he has no sense of humor. I just like, humor is everything, you know, to laugh at yourself and have self-awareness. And so yeah, really into that. And like, You know, I did some theater, but a lot of the theater that was happening in high school was musical. Mm. And now I feel more confident with singing, but I was not, I would like crack and crumble. Mm-hmm. I was really good at lip syncing, did a couple of those. But yeah, so that was what I was really into. As far as like academics, it was such a bummer because I now feel like I'm more into academics. Like if I could do high school all over again, I'd probably be an A student. At the time, I was like a B, C student, except for like, I loved my psychology class. There was like a senior year psychology class. I loved humanities. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. But like, and I love math now, but in high school, I just like kind of decided I wasn't good at it. Mm-hmm, it's such a weird, I mean, you're like a child, you know?
Yeah. Well, I think once, I think there is this kind of, and I could be totally wrong about this, but if you're somebody who does get excited about stuff and you know what that feels like, then that it can be very confusing when, like for me, it's like I can sort of look back and register my interest about certain subjects based on like how excited I was to go to those classes or how excited I was to go to those. If I had felt a flat line pretty much about everything, if it had been like universal across the board, like maybe I wouldn't have thought I was bad or good at math, but I definitely didn't feel excited about math.
Yeah.
And so I didn't try very hard.
Yeah.
And thus I figured pretty early on, like, I'm not good at this. And it doesn't make sense to me the way writing a paper makes sense. It doesn't make sense to me the way like understanding American history makes sense. Like it just didn't feel, frankly, I think I like maybe kind of what you're describing, but I was like real interested in people and the, and artistic things that were about emotion. And because math didn't stir anything in me, I was like, oh, I'm terrible at this.
Even history though, like, yeah, like I've never had a good memory. I mean, it's gotten worse. I've gotten older and smoke more weed, but like, I just, and so studying for like a history, like I couldn't, but then there was a like AV club that started. And so I did that and I also worked on like the yearbook and I did this article for the paper. I'd go around and ask people questions of the week. Think pieces where I'd be like, these people wearing too much Benetton sweatshirts, but like, you know, but I would really get into that stuff. And again, this is no one's fault, but because I didn't know at the time that that was as valid, but I wasn't being graded. Like I loved my extracurricular activities, but I wasn't being graded for AV club or yearbook or any getting poems in the literary magazine. Yeah. And so because those were like, I think maybe without the pressure, I really excelled, but I didn't know to work hard in that because I was like, yeah, but I'm getting like B's and C's, you know? So I don't know much about what schools are like now because I don't have children, but I feel like things have changed a little bit and there's more opportunity to kind of find the right school maybe for your child. But yeah, I sometimes feel bad for young me because I think I could have shown a little bit more if I knew that that was an option.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, all the things you're talking about, I'm thinking like, God, you really deserved credit, like actual on paper credit for all these things you were doing. Because I certainly didn't write for the year, but there wasn't a lot of extracurricular stuff that I would have signed up for except for theater. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, I just wasn't. I joke about this, but like still when I flip through old high school yearbooks, I am blown away by the amount of clubs and stuff that was going on that I just had no sense of whatsoever. Like it would take the yearbook for me to flip through and be like, oh my God, Andy was in that club. There's a chess club. Like I just didn't, it felt like, why would I do anything more to do with school than the bare, and I graduated second in my class. So I was not like, it was not an incredibly great school, all due respect. But but I mean, like, I wasn't.
Where did you grow up?
I was in Tucson, Arizona. But I was like, I was a really good student. I was also like taking a lot of drugs and stuff on the side. But it was an easy enough school that like, and I was smart enough that it was like, great, I could do all of these things. I knew what I was excited about, which was theater. And beyond that, I didn't have a sense at all of like, oh, I should engage in this, or like, oh, this is cool. Oh, so the yearbook gets made by students. Like I just wasn't present to that. I certainly had no time or interest in sports. And so I look back now and I'm like, God, I wonder if I could have let myself be passionate about some of these other after school activities. Like would I have, you know, also enjoyed those and been great at them? I don't know.
It was such, you know, this is something that I've felt for a lot of my life, it's gotten better as I've gotten older. But what was such a bummer, though, was so I was doing these like side things and I would like do them and then kind of lose it. But like I felt very passionately about like writing and act and like not so much acting, but performing. Mm-hmm. Like I just loved and interacting and all that stuff. But because the cool, what it seemed like the standard for high school was you join a sports team, you get a varsity jacket, you go to this party. I so badly wanted to be a normal, whatever you think right. that means at the time, high school student. Yeah. And on top of that, because I had these immigrant parents that were kind of weird and overprotective, but I wasn't immigrant-y enough to be like English as a second language right. foreigner kid. Right. But I also didn't fully feel like I fit in. I mean, I really started to flourish, and this kind of goes back to race and stuff. So Belmont, Massachusetts was like, you know, upper white middle class mostly.
I was going to ask about that too.
Yeah.
If your parents were immigrants, often there is like a community of people that they are drawn to.
Both their families, their entire families moved. Like my mom had six brothers. My dad had two brothers. They all lived like the next town over. But gotcha. In our town, there was a Metco program where they would, you know, some kids from inner cities would be able to go to our school. Mm-hmm. Because my school was really good. Mm-hmm. And so I was always really funny, and like a lot of the, I hate to say white, because I don't mean to, but you know what I mean? Like mm-hmm. just sort of preppy, what would be like, you're like kind of like weird, like, you know, or like annoying. Like I felt like that. But then the black kids and Puerto Rican and like Dominican kids were like, you're funny. Oh, you like to dance. And like, I really felt like, that was when I started to be able to be more of myself, because mm-hmm. I didn't feel as judged when I was being loud and goofy and like, you know, I felt more accepted in yeah. that world. And then I befriended my friend Maria, who's still my best friend. Her parents were also Italian, and she felt so we connected. But when I think back, I'm like I was on field hockey and I hated it. I did softball and my mom would even be like, I will not come to your, like, you hate this.
Right.
But I thought that's what everyone else was doing. Whereas yeah. I would have rather been home writing poetry.
Yeah.
But nobody was like high-fiving you when you went, like, wrote the coolest poem. Uh-huh. You know, like it's
I'd
just,
give you that high five.
Yeah, thank
I was
you.
Definitely doing it. Yeah.
But it was this, there was this really beautiful thing that happened though in high school that's like, you know, so cinematic that I'm sure I'll do something with. But I wrote poems all through high school and wrote a lot and was like this funny kid and da 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 da. And I felt like I didn't get credit or whatever. And then this poem that I wrote about like growing up was in like the literary magazine, but like no one really read the literary, except for like the literary people. Mm-hmm. So then at graduation, unbeknownst to me, the principal read my poem, like didn't tell me he was going to do it. And he was like, you know, I just want to read something that really captures like all the parents were crying. My mom still talks about this is like her proudest moment.
She's
always been like, you're just and my mom's really, it's really cute because my mom is really eloquent with her broken English. Mm-hmm. And I definitely got that from her. Mm-hmm. And it was such a satisfying way to leave school where it was like, oh, this is appreciated. It just wasn't in the like what I thought I was supposed to do. And it's been such a theme in my life, like even with comedy and this career sometimes, like I have, when I'm in a bad headspace, I'll look at what everyone else is doing. I'll be like, well, they did this, this, and this, and I should do those exact steps. And because I haven't had a been on this show yet, and I haven't mm-hmm. done this, then there's something wrong. Yeah. And completely ignoring all the wonderful, unique things where it's like, that's what's going to bring you the community that you want and draw the people into your audience because yeah. you're being true to yourself. If I'm just trying to follow everyone else, it's like, it's still, I haven't changed that much since high school.
Yeah.
Like I'm still like, oh yeah, but that's lame. Like I should really be doing, you know, a half hour special. And it's like, what?
I know. I really get it. And I think that's, It's funny because it just goes back to that idea of like the people who are drawn to the creative side of what we do. Obviously, I'm not speaking as much of like an entertainment lawyer or like somebody who is passionate about being an agent mm-hmm. and like making killer deals and stuff.
Yeah.
Not to just like lean into those cliches, but is like it's very difficult because it's that we're that there's a lot of really sensitive people who get pulled into something like this and feel like, oh, this is my passion, but there is still so much uncertainty and there is so much like soft underbelly to what a lot of us do.
Oh yeah.
And you know, certainly that's true of comedians, but then within comedians, you're absolutely right. It's like, there are people who are just like super ambitious and I mean, look, I don't know, to each their own. And I don't do stand up, but I know what I respond to as a person watching comedy, mm-hmm. which is also incredibly subjective. I do feel that I see people who have become extraordinarily successful monetarily and in fame, and I don't find their comedy honest
for me,
I can't connect to it. It's not my cup of tea. And then the people that I respond to are that to me, it's like, oh, there's an authenticity here that is like undeniable. And that's what I felt about you when I saw you on stage. You know,
oh,
I was like,
you
know, I just thought she's going places, you know,
oh,
and that's, and so if it were up to me, you know, you would have whatever you want now because aww. I don't feel.
Give it to me. And then I throw you, hear me slam you against the wall.
Yeah. Oh my God. Oh my God. She really means it. No, but you know what I mean? Like, I don't like, I can't, but I, from the outside see that idea of like, well, where's your Comedy Central half hour yet? Or where's your Netflix special? Or where's your like,
yeah.
what's your, and I just can't, I don't. I'm just like, I don't, that doesn't feel like it needs to be the way for everyone.
Yeah. And it's not even just career wise. I mean, I did that with relationship. Like I was like, okay, I guess this is what I do. I meet the guy and I should get married right now. And I think shoulds are one of the worst things in the world.
Yeah.
They plague every, like, I mean, I'm better. You just constantly get better, and this might be something I deal with till I die, because maybe this, but like shoulds always ruin my life.
Yeah.
Like they ruin my fun. Like I should do this, I should live here, I should be doing this, I should be more like that, like
yeah.
it, you know. So like in high school I was like, well, I should have a boyfriend and I should like just be on a sports team, and like I desperately wanted to be a cheerleader, and I tried out every year and I never made it because I was like, I should be a cheerleader because cheerleaders are cool, and
yeah.
like all that stuff. And it's so funny when you then, after high school, when your world expands and then you run into people from high school. I recently left Facebook because I like didn't want to keep connecting to people that uh-huh. I don't. I still have a fan page if you want to be my fan, uh-huh. but I just didn't want to engage in conversation. Just all the shit that yeah. Facebook is. And but it's so funny when then like people would reach out and be like, oh, I always thought this of you in high school, and you were always so like, you know, funny, or you were always so sensitive, and like you're like, what? Like,
yeah.
Oh, I didn't, maybe I was more myself than I realized, but I definitely tried to contain it
mm-hmm.
because it didn't feel, you wanted to just be like cookie cutter.
Yeah.
You know,
God, the shoulds.
The shoulds.
That's a great, that's going to be a good, you could call that something. Like you can write a book, or you can write a book.
Oh,
of
it's in my book.
Shoulds, or yeah.
Oh, it's in. I'm working on it.
Okay, yeah. Good. Oh, good.
Yeah.
Well, that's the other thing I was going to ask you about. Is this sort of? I don't feel like this anymore. But when I first was here, especially just kind of being
in LA,
when I first was in LA, and when I was kind of being like, when I was more a part of the sort of like variety, like, again, I don't do stand up, but the sort of like variety show alt comedy kind of UCB world, I very quickly felt like all of my sensitivity and stuff, there was like no place for it. Like it was all about being acerbic and being and like shitting on stuff and like mm-hmm. making fun of shit is like sort of that's the, you know, which does also feel weirdly very high school when you define yourself by what you're contemptuous of instead of what
yes.
you're passionate about.
Yeah.
And the only thing you're passionate about is like someone else who's contemptuous.
Yes.
But I feel much more now like there's a place for all of that. But when I was thinking about you doing stand up and thinking about also your relationship relationship to poetry, I was thinking, like, God, poetry is so uncool in certain ways as it relates to comedy, right? Like, in some weird way, there's, like, a whole universe of this, like, perception in comedy, which makes you wonder, like, does anyone really feel this? Or is it just this weird sociological thing that's been propagated that's, like... Well, poetry's for, like, softies, and we make fun of shit. So yeah. I don't feel... And, like, I don't feel that as much anymore, and I'm so glad. But I think I was, like... I think for me, it took other girlfriends of mine who were also very sharp and in... Well, listen, I just called myself sharp. But, like, women who were in comedy who were very sharp, who I was also finding out had these that were, like, you know, really, like, oh, my God, I cry all the time. Or, oh, my God, I love reading Mary Oliver poetry. And, like, I was like, oh, this is still something that I can be into?
Yeah.
And speaking of shoulds and sort of going, like, oh, God, that's so great. And then as I've gotten older, just that, you know, privilege that people talk about all the time, which is that you just start to give less of a shit about what is a should and what isn't. Hopefully that will continue to happen. And you know what I mean? Like, you
I think it's a balance though. So when I, cause I feel that way too. Like, there's been times where I held back cause I'm like, oh, this is corny, you know, or like I'm being too sincere or whatever. And I don't know if, you know, I always think that everyone's thinking the way I think. I'm like, well, now that I think this, everyone thinks it, right? You know? But you design your own world, so this is true.
Yeah.
But you know, what I said earlier about having a sense of humor, I think there's like a balance. So it's like, okay, not everything has to be like, that's lame, right? But I also do think there's something, I don't like it when people take themselves too seriously. So like any yoga teacher that I've loved,
agreed.
Like I'm obsessed with Tara Brach. I do her meditation lecture podcast. And what I love about her is she's a Buddhist psychologist and she's so funny.
Oh, I better write this down.
Oh, she's amazing. Tara Brach. And every podcast I go on, I'm like, please, I need to meet her. But she has torn open my heart like in such an important way. And has helped me become more authentic and more, you know, conscious and all this stuff, but also made me laugh.
Yeah.
And so I think that's where the balance comes from. Like, yeah, there's a time and place for, you know, like, yeah, lame-o.
Right.
But I also think there's, you know.
I agree. I completely agree.
Yeah.
I completely agree. I think there doesn't need to be, well, it's sort
it doesn't
of
need
the,
to be so heavy.
It's sort of being the independent, right? In the political spectrum of... You don't feel soft and sweet about anything, or don't make fun of anything ever because that's not authentic and that's you're protecting yourself. It's like, no, there's a place for both of those things. And I feel, and I bet you feel this way too, that on any given day, I can say something, mean it from the bottom of my heart, shit on it 5 minutes later, laugh about it, and then an hour after that be crying over how sensitive and sweet I am, and like proud of myself, and then make fun of the fact that I was like congratulating myself for being sensitive.
Yeah, because you're
all
a human
that feels
being.
Important. Yeah.
You're
and it all feels valid and important and it feels rich. It feels like a you know, like how lucky.
Yeah.
How lucky to be able to have all of those perspectives and to be able to be humble and to be able to sort of flip back and forth and feel like that's kind of fleshing out the whole picture of the way you see the world.
Yeah. I mean, I've been having so much fun lately on stage trying to talk more about that stuff. I haven't perfected all the things I want to say. Like, it's a process, but I've been really having fun, like making fun of activism, making fun of hypocrisy, making fun of feelings, making fun of depression. Like, I, you know, like just last year, I finally started using the word depression for, because I used to always be like, oh, I'm like sensitive and a little anxious. And like, I felt safer in that. And once I finally said it and like, handled it and like went on medication and like actually gave it a place to live, I can now go back and think of some of the things I did as a teenager and a young adult and be like, oh, that's not because I was like wrong. It's because I was depressed.
Yeah.
And I didn't think that I was allowed to be like, it would be like, I'm fine. Like, you know, that high pitch,
totally.
Whatever. Yeah. And so I mean, my favorite compliment that I get after a show, like, of course I love when people tell me I'm funny. I mean, I know I'm funny. Everyone's funny. I really do. Everybody is funny.
Yeah.
To someone.
Yeah.
I love it when someone says, oh my God, I felt so connected when you said blah, blah, blah. Or like, oh my God, I felt like I was just hanging out with a friend.
That comes across so strongly in your sets too.
Oh, I mean, thank you.
I did not like I produce a comedy festival. I didn't like hunt someone down of the 200 plus shows that we had. Honestly, if I, because I didn't know you, there are a bunch of people whose work I love that I've had on the podcast or I, you know, I've just done stuff with because they're in LA or whatever. But I seriously was like, the show's over. I need to immediately introduce myself to Julia. I can't wait to podcast her, you know? And I have not forgotten that I want you to talk more about your podcast. But, there's two outstanding issues that I want to cover with you before we get into this MASH game that I play, you know, Mansion Apartment. But that was all, that was totally like, that was so clear to me. And it was why I loved your set so much and why I was like, oh yeah, she's got it. Like she's figured it out. And so whether or not you always know exactly how a joke is going to get framed, obviously that's something you continue to work on no matter what, but your voice as a comedian, I think is like crystal clear and it's so appealing.
That's
and
so nice to hear.
When my boyfriend and I, when I was like, as I'm like, yeah, I'm scheduling this podcast. He was like, oh, who's coming over today? And I said, Julia. And he was like, oh, wait, Julia from San Francisco. And I was like, yeah, you know, like the attic, because that part of your bit is your set is so funny. And it's just great. And so immediately he was like, oh yeah, that was great. You know what I mean?
I mean, it's taken me.
And you guys are just going to have to find an opportunity to see that, to know what that is in reference to. Guys, so sorry.
It has taken me so long, I think, to like, I started the first time I ever spoke into a microphone on stage and told jokes was my senior year of high school. Just on like a whim, like there was like a talent show thingy with the theater department. And my best friend Maria was like, you should do stand up. I'm like, gross. Like, I didn't like stand up as a kid. I was like, boring. Like, I wanted to be Helen Roper. I still want to be Helen Roper. Yeah. Like, I want to wear a muumuu and be like, I'm horny, you know? Like, that's what I want to be.
Yeah.
So it's great that I want an older lady part. And, but I, you know, I had one toe in and one toe out with stand up specifically because of what you were talking about, because the hardened part doesn't appeal to me, because oftentimes I felt too sensitive, because I would be like, I don't feel like doing comedy tonight. Like I struggled a lot with that because I wasn't a kid that grew up watching stand up. I just was a kid that grew up liking to explore feelings and relationships.
Yeah.
And so for a very long time, my relationship with stand-up was like, I love it, I hate it, I love it, I hate it. And it was because I kept trying to like mimic what I thought I should be doing with comedy. I quit a couple times. So like when people ask me how long I've been doing it, I'm like, I mean, as myself, about 8 years, but I tried it many years ago, not to discount my earlier career.
Right.
But I feel like I had two careers because it really wasn't until I feel like the past 3 years that I got to this place of like, hey, I might start crying on stage, but I mean, I'm not going to really start crying. But, you know, like
But I think there's this idea of giving yourself permission.
Yes.
Because that's how I think I have gotten through anxiety a lot, where I'm like, yeah, you know what? Like I did when I was on this comedy cruise thing, that was wonderful. So I don't mean to like discount it, but there was a point at which I was really seasick and I had to go and be a part of a panel. And I was so obsessing over whether or not I was going to like have to run out of the room that I made it this huge deal. And I was sitting quietly because I hadn't been asked anything yet. And then like someone asked me something and the first thing that came out of my mouth was like, so anyway, I'm going to answer this question, but if I drop the microphone and run out into the bathroom, it's because I'm seasick. So And it just felt so, like as soon as I said it, I knew I wasn't going to be seasick.
I thought you were going to say as soon as you opened your mouth,
I threw up. Yeah. I just threw up everywhere. It was great. It was liberating. No, but I mean like I have a lot of anxiety, more so than depression. Like these guys know, like very certifiable, like, you know, some really rough times with anxiety, especially when I was younger. But that headspace where like I'm lucky enough to have an active enough brain that I can have 60 conversations going on while I'm performing something or whatever, that idea of like the should of like, oh, I better seem really polished, or I better not, like I can't do this, or everyone will be whispering about what's wrong with me. And I'm, you know, and just to be able to say like, God, I'm so motion sick right now. Like, I don't know what's going to happen. It turned out that 50% of the seasickness I was feeling was the anxiety of the seasickness that I was feeling. And as soon as everyone kind of laughed and I was like, oh, it's fine if I have to run away and puke, like everyone will understand that, I knew I wasn't going to. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. And so that idea of like, maybe I'll start crying on stage. I'm probably not going to start crying on stage, but fuck you. Maybe yeah. I'll start crying on stage.
Well, know? And it's also this idea of like, you know, being authentic and like, which is just a hard, again, I think it's a lifelong thing
yeah.
because you're constantly learning about yourself. You're constantly changing, but you're still you at your core. That's what I mean. Like I'm still that kid.
Yeah, me too.
And it's been really interesting because my, I have two nieces and the youngest one, Felicia. So my sister, they're like pretty much, the older one is very much like my sister. The younger one's very much like me. It's, they're like two sisters are like us. And my mom and my sister keep being like, oh my God, Felicia was like, so she doesn't care. She was doing a show. She's just like you. Oh, you should have seen her. She's like, so funny. And they keep, and it's so weird because sometimes it almost makes me a little sad, if that makes any sense, because I'm like, oh, and it's so great for her right now because she's young and she's not worried about bills and no one's told her that she's weird yet. And she's just like, my parent, like my family is right. Like I am just like her. But a lot of that got affected by life. Mm-hmm. And lately I've been trying to go back. Like she's been reminding me to be like goofy and fearless and just like she's so sweet but funny. And like I, you know, when you're being not yourself and you're trying to do these things because you should – the opportunities that present themselves to you are also going to be unauthentic. So when you're being fake on a date, you're going to have a fake new boyfriend that relationship's going to fail. If you're being weird on stage and you get booked on a gig, it's going to be a you know, it might be temporarily okay, but it's not going to have longevity.
Right.
And so I'm just learning that like the more authentic that I can be, it might be taking me longer. Mm-hmm. It's taken me a very long time, but I believe there's longevity with it.
Absolutely.
Because I'm not wasting so much energy being fake.
Absolutely.
And now I have all this energy to just be me.
Yeah.
Ooh.
Also, I'm glad. Listen, I am the first person who's going to say I'm glad that no one, I don't want to have peaked early. Like I'm glad because that does happen. It doesn't always happen. I'm not saying every person who, you know, has tremendous success at 25 isn't going to hold on to it. That's entirely possible. I personally am glad that it has taken me the amount of time that it has to have whatever tiny modicum of success I've had. I would rather be looking forward and being like, maybe it's only going to get better.
Yeah.
Than like to be able to go like, boy, I really thought I had it figured out and I was doing so great at 30 and now I'm just... yikes, was that it for me?
Like, yeah,
I don't want that either. So great, let's peak late. Who cares?
Yeah.
Be Mrs. Roper. Do you know what I mean? Now that takes me back to this, which is good because this will then segue into it. This is my little weird patterning of how this is gonna go because I am very aware of the time. Number one, when you were a horny kid, and the access, the primary access you had to, and I'm asking this for personal reasons because I know somewhat of what my answer would be. Did you ever think that you were gay or that you were bi, or maybe you are bi, or you don't have to label yourself at all? But here's what I'm saying is I was so into tits because that's what was out there that meant sex. And that has a tremendous amount to do with like, you know, a patriarchal culture and the way that sex is delivered to you through the media. so I'm just wondering if you ever had that, like if you had experiences with girls, or you don't have, and by the way, you can be totally private about any. Do you know what I mean? Or if like it was that's a sort of like non question. That's a general idea of like, if you're a young person, as we both were, like very horny kids. And what I'm still interested about myself is like, was I interested in this idea of like naughtiness, and the naughtiness always played out, seemed to primarily always play out with guys looking at naked women, or knowing that this was exciting to someone else was exciting to me by virtue. Oh, like there's just an interesting sort of, I mean, that's like a whole human sexuality podcast you and I could start together.
Yeah.
But I'm just curious if you have like a quick sort of small response.
I never thought of it that way. And I think that's really interesting. Well, okay. I don't know the firm answer, firm wieners, but I do. I mean, yes, okay. So when it comes to sex, women do turn me on, but I know I don't I wouldn't say never, but like I, for a minute in college, I thought I was a lesbian, as many of us do. And I hooked up with a girl and it was fun, but I was definitely like, where is your penis? Like, so I knew then, and again, none of this is an absolute, but I for Julia Razzi only, tend to want to date men. But I have hooked up with women, and I find, you know, definitely when I, if I watch a dirty movie, it's usually there's more women than men in it. Cause, but I also think that goes back to, and I've read some things about this. Yes, it might be your point, cause that's really interesting. I never thought of it, but also women are tend to be more sensual. Like a guy, like penises are like, here it is, you know, like it's just like, I think they're magical. I love, my favorite thing is a grower, not a shower. That is like, that is God's creation. I think it's so, I don't understand it. I think it's so fucking cool. I mean, I would take a grower over a shower than a big dick any day. Cause I'm just like, this is a miracle, you know, like where did you go when you were soft? I mean, I love it, but I think that, you know, women, they're curvy and their bodies are interesting. And I think that's why, and again, it might be a cultural thing, but I think that's why like women who are bi-curious are more accepted than men who are. And so I don't really know the, I don't even know if I'm answering your question, but.
I don't know. I mean, there is no right or wrong.
Yeah, like I was definitely.
Kind of like a, it's a real mulling sort of a question that's not really a question. So, but.
But I think the overall thing that turned me on and still turns me on is the naughtiness. So, because I remember, and this was like a new thing for me, it was a few years ago, I was on the subway in New York, and I watched two men. And I don't know if they didn't know each other or if they were a couple and playing a game, but they did like an, it was so hot.
Yeah.
It's two like gorgeous men and they were doing like an eye contact thing. And then like one of them licked their lips at the other and then they left together. And I was like, oh, I want to watch them fuck.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, and that's, that was just cause it was sensual and sexy.
Yes, 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 yes.
So I think that's the answer.
Yeah, yeah. That's great. That's great.
Yeah.
Outstanding. And since you have the willingness to kind of talk about that stuff and the sort of interest in people and their relationships, I assume you and your boyfriend found that in each other and you decided to do the podcast and kind of about that stuff. So tell us about that.
Oh, yeah. So we have a podcast. Will Miles is my boyfriend. He's a great comic, super funny. He, we have a podcast called Hopefully We Don't Break Up where we just, it's real simple. We just talk to another couple. Sometimes they're comedians, sometimes they're complete non in the entertainment world, like pretty much any couple that's been together at least a year that's willing to talk and hopefully isn't like at each other's throats for the whole hour.
Yeah.
But they're all, you know, it's been poly couples, gay, straight. We had a trans couple, you know, everything, right? Yeah. Will's parents. And yeah, it's just been really fun because like my background was, you know, I went from like no boyfriend to like married to like long-term dysfunctional rebound boyfriend that was like a liar and all this weird stuff to like single for the first time ever in my 30s and like loving it, like totally killed it. Met him. He had only been a whore. And then I was his first girlfriend.
Yeah.
And so we really have this like unique, like, well, I don't know what I'm, even though I've been married, I don't know what I'm doing. He's like, well, I don't know what I've been doing.
Yeah.
And so that's just,
that's
it's
great.
Yeah. It's just like, no one knows what they're doing. So let's just talk about it.
I love it. I couldn't support that and love that more. Okay. I'm going to get into this MASH game. My categories, well, first I'm going to start with, I think I've been like overthinking because you said so much great stuff that I in the back of my mind, I was like, oh no, where am I going to go with this MASH game? Because I try to tailor it a little bit to the person. So to buy myself time, I'm going to go with, I never do this, but this is the category I'm starting with is my one that I make sure is in every podcast, which is in our reality, obviously there are foods that are not great for you for one reason or another. In this alternate universe MASH reality, you can have as much of it as often as you want. It can be something that is like you can't ever get because it was the one ice cream that you had in France that one time. But in this world, snap of the fingers, and it's actually like nutritious and good for you. And you can just have it in perpetuity with no physical ramifications. Three
foods like that. Pizza from Belmont Pizza.
Great.
It's so oily. it's so oily. Love and I'm also lactose intolerant, so I can't really eat it.
That's
okay.
What this game is for.
Oh God. What's next? I guess like a like a sandwich with lots of bacon and aioli. Mm-hmm. I guess there's a burger in there. But see, even in this world, I'd still want it to be like grass-fed and organic. That's so like the juiciest, filthiest burger.
Right.
And then I guess the third, what is my third favorite food?
I like watching people. I like to see whether it's like a mix of sweet and salt, like mix of sweet and savory, or if it's all savory. Sometimes it's
gonna be all savory. Okay, I guess the next would be the fattest platter of antipasto.
Oh, great!
Like doused in olive oil, great, with like a like. So it's a platter, and it's got like a baguette.
Yep.
Yes, olive oil indeed. To dip in. Yeah. Olives, marinated mushrooms, artichokes, salami, great, prosciutto.
Great,
all of it.
Great, perfect. Okay. Fantastic. You're going to be just fine at this. Next one is the traditional MASH question of the sort of alternate universe partner, sex partner, somebody that it could just be for naughty times, or it could be like, oh, my alternate universe wife or husband or whatever. Uh-huh. Three. And it could be like a character from a book or from a movie. It doesn't have
to
be.
So not
like,
including my boyfriend.
Not. Well, I mean, listen, if you want to throw him in there, it's totally fine with me. This is your MASH game.
All right, let's throw my boyfriend in there. Great. Well,
got him.
You heard that. Oh, gosh. It's so funny. I don't really get my crushes like last in the moment and then they kind of disappear.
Understood. I'm the same way, I think. Although I still can come up pretty easily with, I think. I don't think that they're consistent from day to day, but.
Okay. So I need two more.
And like I said, it could be that you're like, oh, my God, this one character that so-and-so played in this one movie, I just want to fuck their brains out. But like. That's all I would want from this, you know what I mean? From this reality.
It's so funny because as a side note, I will have that and then I get over them like a breakup. Like, did you watch the show Awkward on MTV?
Mm-mm, but I know it.
The love interest?
Yeah.
Oh my God, I wanted him so bad. And then when I stopped watching the show because the season ended, I was like, no, we're done. It was like the weirdest thing, but I like was like, I need this. I'm gonna be so fucking cliche and say Ryan Gosling.
Just fine.
And why don't we throw in?
And it can also be like reigniting a crush that you had from, like, you don't feel that way about the person now, but you are like, if I could go back to how much I wanted that person at, you know, when I was 12 or whatever, that's also like perfectly acceptable. Like I probably would like throw John Larroquette into mine just for shits and giggles.
I guess I'll then if we're gonna do that, it would be Bret Michaels, the lead singer of Poison, even this though I don't feel that way anymore.
No, I love it though.
But when I did, I did.
Just reconnect. This will be you reconnecting with the feeling of how you felt about Bret Michaels. He represents something. Okay. Next is place to have a vacation home anywhere in the world. And it's like teleportation to get there. You don't have to like deal with a long flight or whatever. Three places.
Okay. Let's do Italy.
Great.
Hawaii.
Great.
And Australia.
Great. Okay. Three alternate universe like skills. It could almost be like a profession if it's like, oh, I'm a fashion designer in this other universe, or it could just be like, you know, you can play piano really well or whatever. But three sort of alternate universe skills that you would have.
Fashion designer.
Great.
Definitely.
Great.
Therapist.
Great.
Well, therapist / like perfect. Like, I just want to wear like a lot of scarves and linen.
Great.
And sit cross-legged. Understood. Yeah. Understood. Turquoise. And then I guess the last one. I know. Like news reporter, but specifically the segment at the end where like, have you been wronged by this tire company? I really get into justice. Street justice. Yeah.
Great.
Justice
it.
Reporter.
I love it. That makes me want to talk to you about some other stuff offline. Okay. next category is, let's do, maybe this will appeal to you then, because I kind of like doing this. Three styles from any time in history that it is utterly impractical for one reason or another for you to get to sport around. But like in this reality, no one would blink twice if you were wearing a corset, which by the way, was also really comfortable, or men's clothing in full drag or XYZ, something like that.
Mine's going to be boring because it's all stuff that I probably do wear, but like I mean, nonstop moo-moos.
Great.
Like agreed. Helen Roper nonstop.
100% agree. Yeah.
I mean, I have like four, but I would like to wear them all the time.
Yeah.
Then I guess I am so boring. I don't know.
Don't you dare. Listen, you know what I'm hearing from you right now? Some shoulds.
Yeah, you're right. I should.
This is for you. This is for you.
I also do kind of dress like this too, but I'll just say it, like full nonstop, like hip hop tracksuits.
Great.
Every day.
Great.
All day.
Great.
And then I guess the last would be like a go-go outfit.
Oh, great. Sure.
Booty shorts and like tall boots.
Yeah. That's great. And nothing about this is boring. And also, who cares? Fantastic answers.
I'm like still trying to replace Ryan Gosling with someone. In the back of my head, I'm like listening, but I'm also...
If you want to throw it out if something hits you, also the characteristics of this game are like 2 hours from now, you will be like, oh, why didn't I just say...
But, yeah.
That's part of the game. Okay, three movies that you can jump into and just interact with the characters, be in that world, can be, you know... fantasy based, can be crime based. You're not going to get hurt inside them. It's just sort of like getting that all over you. You know what I mean?
National Lampoon's European Vacation.
Great.
100%.
Great, great, great.
I guess The Godfather.
Mm-hmm.
And Boogie Nights.
Great. Oh, that movie's so good.
So good.
Okay, perfect. Next category is let's do people like somebody from history or someone now that's like almost like a little bit of a mentor, but you know, not in a way that you're totally deferential to them, but you could just call them and be like, hey, it's me. And they'd be like, oh, Julia, what's up? And then you could just tell them anything and you'd hang up the phone being like, ah, that was great. I feel so much better. Like three people like that. Again, living or dead, doesn't matter.
Buddha.
Great.
Tara Brach, great, please. Great, I mean, that great. Could be possible if she's
great,
listening.
Great.
Oh, I don't want to say Oprah, but
God, I probably would.
Let's put Oprah.
I mean, listen, she's a very special woman.
She is. I can't believe I was woman. Like, I don't know if I want to talk to Oprah.
You're worried. You think it's a cliche answer. You couldn't be more wrong. It's great. These are great. But also, you don't need reassurance from me. So fuck you, Janet. Okay. And then last one is for you. Oh, three television shows that you can go live in and just be in and be with the characters.
Us, The Rez Company.
Great.
The Golden Girls.
Great.
And... let's see. What would be my third? Oh, I thought this would be easier. Let's do Dynasty.
Oh, great, 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 great. You know what's funny? This is a little side note, but I never watched Designing Women, really. I just had an awareness of it. But my feelings about Jean Smart now...
Oh, you're very
Jean
Smart.
You would think I was a huge fan of that show because every time I see her, I'm like, Jean Smart, everybody. She's the best of the best. So great. Designing Women, right? Right? And then if anyone were like, what was her character's name on Designing Women? I'd be like, I have no idea. No idea.
Love it.
Okay. Okay. So then, you know, with a MASH game, it's like I do a little squiggle thing that helps me figure out what this MASH future of yours is going to contain. So just tell me when to stop.
Stop.
I'm going to pause this, do a little bit of this and that. You do a little bit of that. Yeah. I'm going to come back and let you know what you ended up with. Okay, listen. There's some great stuff in here. Now, I admittedly, it's funny, but like when I form an emotional attachment to someone's choices and I'm like, I was like, it's so stupid. You know when you like feel like someone just came up with something because they needed a third thing or they say the middle, like I've started it. I've done so many of these that and I've never gone meta like this before where I talk about this process ever, but which is a compliment to you because it means I don't want this to end. But I've done so many of these that I think I've developed this like sense of like feeling sorrow when someone loses someone I know they really liked or
oh, no,
a thing they
boyfriend.
Wanted. Yeah, you definitely didn't get him. where it's like a thing you want, or yeah, or it's like, oh, I felt like they easily had this answer and then they had to struggle for the other two, whatever it was. So I did have that, but ironically, I did not have that with Will, because I was like, it's fine, in real life she's got him, yeah, so I'm not worried
maybe
about that.
Let's see who it is though.
But this is the two places where I really felt like a twinge of like sincere sorrow were when you got the Godfather instead of European Vacation.
Oh,
like, I had an emotional
response. Yeah, I didn't really want the Godfather.
I know. I felt it and I felt really bad. I was like, oh, not okay. European Vacation. I really wanted that for her. And I felt real bad when you lost your muumuus and you got your tracksuits. Which I know the tracksuits is fine.
Yeah.
But I love muumuus. So see, that was more of a personal thing.
Yeah.
For me.
I own just as many muumuus as tracksuits currently.
Now that said, I needn't have worried because you can jump into Three's Company whenever you goddamn feel like it.
So I'm going to be Larry now. I'm like a velour.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
100%. I look more like Larry than 100%. Helen Roper anyways.
Oh my God. So that made me very happy. So it was this is a real roller coaster for me as a podcast host. You have a beautiful house in Hawaii.
Okay.
Fantastic.
Okay. Cool.
You have, we've already covered The Godfather. In your spare time, you're also a sort of street justice reporter, which, by the way, I really want to see in the tracksuit because I think that's fantastic.
Oh, my God.
Like, really get it done.
Yeah.
After you do all this important work, you can sit down for a beautiful, delicious, vibrant plate of antipasto. With just everything.
I just got food horny.
Whatever you want there. Yeah. Ditto. And you are getting your spiritual side fulfilled by none other than Buddha.
Yes!
And your relationship/sex side fulfilled by Ryan Gosling.
Yeah!
So
I acted like it was a question. Oh, so maybe I'm with Will,
fine.
But I fuck Ryan Gosling.
Well, there
inside.
You go. That's absolutely fine.
Great.
100%. And I appreciate that you love your boyfriend enough that you wanted him to be a part of this fictional
future.
Nice? I think
that's
quite darling.
And if anyone listening cares, because I have been trying to figure out how to bring street justice into my life.
Yeah.
Would you watch videos of me in a tracksuit? I'm not even kidding.
Yeah.
Doing street justice.
Yeah, I mean, I certainly would.
Okay. This might be, I'm not...
I've got to be honest with you, I just finished Luke Cage on Netflix and I have zero interest in Iron Fist. So maybe I need to just come right over and watch Julia Rossi doing
Street Justice
in a tracksuit. My new superhero.
This is me copywriting.
Okay, great.
Right now.
Great. It's been said, guys. Okay. This is like her FedExing this envelope to herself. For those of you who haven't written something and you don't know that that's a thing, it might not even be a thing anymore, but now it's been said. Thank you so much for doing the
podcast.
Thank
you for having me.
I'm delighted to know you.
Yeah, I'm delighted to know you.
This is only the beginning. I know you're going to be going back to New York, but I just can't say enough good things about this woman, everybody. So check her out, and I will talk to you next time on the podcast.
As always, the JV Club theme song is Back Before We Were Brittle by the amazing Say Hi.
Now leaving Nerdist.com. Thank you.